Hello, and welcome to a roundtable discussion on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, I'm joined by guests for a lively conversation on a topic we hope you'll find interesting.
Aloha! This is Jason from Hawaii. Welcome to a special edition of the Comic Book Page podcast. In this episode, I interviewed Brad and Lisa Gullickson from the Comic Book Couples Counseling podcast. Now let's get started. Aloha, this is Jason from Hawaii. I am here with Brad and Lisa Gullickson, the hosts for the Comic Book Couples Counseling podcast. Brad and Lisa, welcome to the show.
Yay. Thank you, Jason. Thank you so much. Happy to be here. Excited to be here.
Oh, thank you. How are you guys doing today?
Oh, man, we're doing great. We actually not too long ago finished recording an episode, or actually an interview for an episode ourselves. Every time we record an episode, it leaves us feeling like a little jazzed. And so this is a nice little come down from that episode, hopefully.
Yeah.
Okay. So for our listeners, just to get a little bit of a history, is that we're Twitter friends. We follow each other, you know, on Twitter. You know, I know you guys post you guys post nice pictures of you guys walking in the woods, but also you guys post incredible pictures of, you're going to have to correct me on this one. You guys posted a picture of a commission from Ramona. I can't remember.
Oh, Ramona Fraiden. Yeah.
Yeah, that was a cool one.
Prized possession.
We just got a new commission from Stan Sakai that we're super stoked about.
We've only just started purchasing commissions during 2020 and 2021. So it's like a new addiction, a dangerous addiction, but one we're very excited about.
So, like I said, I wanted to interview you guys for the podcast is because, you know, I've listened to a few of your episodes, and what I really love about the episodes is that it's your guys' episodes are so upbeat. There's a lot of positive energy in the show, you know, and, you know, that's what I love about it. Also, too, before we start, I'm going to let listeners know, you know, this is going to be a very fun episode. You know, we'll have a bunch of laughs, great stories to tell. Also, too, I sent Brad and Lisa the questions for them to answer, because, you know, it's just in case. So I don't want some listener to go, I can't believe Jason asked that question, you know?
And plus, we're buds with Jason, so we don't mind answering his questions and sharing our lives with you. That's part of the fun of being into comics and being into podcasts.
Oh, but thank you very much, Lisa. Okay, so the first question, promote the podcast.
You want to take it, Lisa?
Sure. Well, the podcast that we do is called the Comic Book Couples Counseling Podcast, and it is a beautiful marriage between comic books and self-helpy type stuff. So what we do is we take an iconic comic book couple like Scott Summers and Jean Grey, and we pair them with a relationship book like The Five Love Languages, and we apply The Five Love Languages to their relationship as a means to talk about and help our relationship.
Oh, okay. That's pretty cool. And then where can followers follow you guys on social media?
Well, on Twitter and Instagram, you can find us CBCC Podcast. Of course, you can follow Lisa's individual account at Sidewalk Siren. My account is at Mouth Dork. And, you know, you can find everything Comic Book Couples Counseling related on comicbookcouplescounseling.com.
Okay. So I'm going to start off origin stories. So whoever wants to start off for it, where did you guys grow up?
Well, I'm the oldest, so I think I should go.
That's fair.
My story began before yours, Lisa.
Okay.
So I was born in Long Beach, California, but my dad was Navy, so we moved around the country quite a bit, went all up and down California. We settled for probably the longest time in San Diego. Mm-hmm. Until I was about 10 years old. And then my dad retired from the Navy and moved the family to Virginia. And it was in Virginia where I became a comic book fan. And I've been in Virginia since the early 90s for the most part.
I was also born in California, though much later than Brad. I am much younger. Just joking. But we moved to Virginia when I was like 2 and a half. And we've lived here for literally forever.
Okay. And then, again, any of you guys, whoever wants to start off, what drew you guys into comics?
So I moved to Virginia. We moved to Burke, Virginia, which is not too far from Washington, D.C. And I had a lot of trouble connecting with friends. School was very hard. We moved, of course, like in the summer, as you would with a kid. So, you know, there wasn't even like the classroom to connect you with other children. And my dad took me to Burke Books and Comics in 1990. And I had never been in a direct market comic book shop in my life. Mm-hmm. But when we walked through that door and I saw the wall of single issues, and then there was like the back of the comic book shop that had all the long boxes, and I immediately became attracted to that, and my eye gravitated towards recognizable titles. So, you know, I was a big movie kid, I was a big Star Wars kid, G.I. Joe, Transformers, and so my eye went to all of those comics, and through those comics is when I discovered, you know, Superman and Batman and Spider-Man and the Avengers and things like that.
And I didn't get into comics until what some would consider late in life, in my 20s. Growing up, I was into Disney movies, mm-hmm. and Nick at Night and Stephen Sondheim musicals. So I had my own little nerd thing going on. I was actually a huge Monkees fan. When all of my little friends were into, like, I like NSYNC and I like 98 Degrees. I'm like, do you know who is cool? The Monkees. They are my boy band.
Wait a minute, Lisa, sorry. So wait, let me get this straight. So now, and I also want to make it clear to, because I'm sure in case some of our listeners are young. So the Monkees, we are talking about the 1960s TV show with Davy Jones. Mike,
that is correct. So growing up, I was not allowed to watch Nickelodeon, but I was allowed to watch Nick at Night. So I would wait up anxiously. And then the summer in between sixth and seventh grade, they had a Monkees Monday. And I saw Mickey Dolenz, yes. for the first time. And my heart went aflutter. Mm-hmm. And I headed over to the Sam Goody and I started buying all of their CDs. And I was just dreaming of just going back in time and marrying a monkey. And that is how I entered high school. So real popular kid. And then when I went to college, I discovered that I was into nerdy guys. And so as a means of wooing said nerds, I was dating a guy who was into comics, kind of. So I read Watchmen and I read Sandman. And yeah, so that's how I got into comics, because I wanted to date nerdy guys, and it worked because I married one, a huge one.
Yes. Lisa, sorry, Brad, I'm going to go back. So Lisa, because when you talked about that period of the Monkees on Nickelodeon, I'm trying to remember this, because that was sometime in the 90s, right? Because I know they were replaying those episodes, and
it was literally like 19. I'm pretending like I don't know the exact year to seem cool. But it was 1996.
Yeah.
And literally it was for a few weeks.
Yeah.
And then it was replaced by Green Acres Mondays. And even to this day, when I hear the Green Acres theme, mm-hmm. literally rage pulsates and radiates through my body. Because they would play it on a loop. So they would play the Monkees starting at like 8 p.m. or something. Yeah. And then they would play it again at like 4 a.m. So I would just stay up and watch the same episodes twice. And it would be like 6 episodes. And then they started releasing the episodes on VHS.
Yeah.
And so actually behind me, I do have one of my best Christmases ever. My parents gave me the whole VHS box set of all of the Monkees episodes. And I was literally, I was beside myself with joy. I was like, the Christmas spirit is real.
And to this day, if we were talking Lisa's true passion, her true passion is the Monkees.
Mm-hmm. I do love them so much.
Yeah.
I collect Monkees comics because they did put out comics in the late 60s.
Okay.
Yeah, the Dell stuff.
Yeah.
Couple things. Sorry, Brad. So a couple.
No, that's all right.
Have you met any of the Monkee actors? Because I know a couple of them. I think two of them passed away.
Yes. I only met Peter, and he did recently pass away. And so I'm so glad that I had the opportunity. And I waited in line.
I was there for this one.
And I had my phone so we could get a picture. And I passed the phone to Brad. Mm-hmm. And I was just so giddy. And Peter could clearly see that I was just too excited to meet him. And he goes like, "Who's that guy over there taking the pictures?" And I said, "Oh, that's my husband, Brad. But I would happily leave him for a Monkee." And Peter declined, of course, because he's a god. But next to him, I did look radiant.
I was not hurt. It was the only thing I knew Lisa was going to say, because her Monkee's passion knows no bounds.
Mm-hmm. All right. So I'm going to continue on. Thank you, Lisa, for that story, because I do want to touch up on your trying to collect the Monkees comic a little further in the interview.
Sure.
So, Lisa, I know you said that The Watchmen and The Sandman were your first comics. Brad, what was your first comic?
I bought two on that day I went into Joe Gumbinger's store in Burke, Virginia. I bought two. One was G.I. Joe number 103 with Storm Shadow busting through a skylight. It's like the hero version of Storm Shadow, not his like Cobra outfit, but mm-hmm. his like Joe outfit. And, you know, written by Larry Hama. I just looked it up. I think it's Michael Bright is the illustrator on it. Anyway, like, you know, I was way into G.I. Joe. So that was going to be the first comic I bought. But on that day, I also bought the Marvel Comics adaptation of RoboCop 2, which was like, I think, three issues that they collected into a trade paperback. So I bought that trade paperback. And, you know, I was a movie maniac, but I was still too young to watch R-rated films. I was slowly like breaking my parents down on a few R-rated movies at that point. Like they had let me see, I think I had seen Commando, the Schwarzenegger film by that point.
Yes.
But RoboCop was still like too much. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to see RoboCop. Mm-hmm. And if I couldn't see RoboCop, I could at least buy the comic book. Mm-hmm. And the comic book, you know, from Marvel, I read that thing to pieces. I wish I still had a copy. I should buy a replacement.
Yeah, you should.
I have the G.I. Joe comic still, but I don't have that RoboCop 2 adaptation. Mm-hmm. And so, like, I really do cherish those. But what was interesting is, like, you buy those two issues, and we had to leave. Mm-hmm. But I felt the draw to come back to the shop. And my dad had been trying to get me to read. I was very slow to read. And, you know, we would go to bookstores and he'd buy me whatever book I'd want because he was really trying to encourage. And when he saw that I liked these comic books so much, he said, "Well, we should go back to the shop. Let's go back to the shop." And like every weekend, my dad would take me back to Joe Gumbinger's shop and he would buy, you know, three comics for me.
That's nice.
And that's when I got, you know, I think by that point it was Eric Larson on Amazing Spider-Man. Can't remember the number, but it's the Venom Island mm-hmm. Issues. And that run of Spider-Man comics made me a Spider-Man fan. And then, you know, it just snowballed like it does for so many of us.
Mm-hmm. Lisa, I'm going to ask, during your college years, did you have an LCS?
I did. So I went to George Mason University. Uh-huh. And right across the street, there is a comic book store. I'm pretty sure it's still there. It's changed hands. It's had a couple of names. Uh-huh. I think at the time it was called Phoenix.
Yes, yes.
And yeah. I actually had really negative experience there. So I had, you know, since broken up with that guy, but I still was in love with comics and I wanted to learn more. So I started going into the comic book store. And I would just kind of quietly like pick up a couple of single issues and, you know, buy them and then go to the deli and eat a sandwich and read my comic books. But I really didn't have any guidance. Like I was just kind of just going whatever. And finally I said, like, I think I saw that they had the sheet for opening a box out. And I was like, oh, you just need five titles and you can have a box. And so I went up to the guy and I was like, hey, I'm really interested in opening a box. And he goes like, you really have to be into comics to open up a box. You have to be into like five or more titles. And it was such like a, gatekeepery kind of thing where it felt like he didn't want my business. And so I just kind of, I tried to continue going back, but I just stopped.
It's so gross. I hate that story.
Yeah. So then I just continued buying stuff from like just Barnes and Noble is what I would do until, you know, now Brad and I have a really nice local comic book store that we went to all of the time. But like comics is not always the friendliest place for noobs for me.
It's such a disappointing like story to hear. And as somebody who has worked in a comic book shop and who worked in Barnes Noble for a long time, the idea that somebody would come in and say like, I would like to open a subscription.
A hot chick.
Yeah. And, yeah ever be so humble, but she's right. And to say like, I don't know if you're really going to be wanting this. I don't know if you like this enough. It like boils my blood. I've heard this story so many times and it makes me so mad.
And he's heard it many times because I never forget and I never forgive.
No. They have changed hands and it is a much better shop today than it was then.
Yeah. Now it's a laughing ogre.
No, it was laughing ogre and now it is the Amazing Comic Shop.
Oh my God. Lisa, I'm so sorry you had to go through that.
It's okay.
No, because it's kind of because the thing is, back then in the 80s and 90s, I understand the mentality, you know, of comic shops, especially direct market comic shops is, because you go in there, you know, because I'm in my 50s. So I've been to comic shops in the 80s, you know, and all you see is guys. That's all it is. If a woman walks in or, you know, high school, you know, whether
outsider.
Yeah. It's either an outsider or it's like, wow, she's into comics, you know, it just throws us off, but I'm glad. But the thing is, what's really nice is that nowadays, majority of the comic shops are basically is embracing everybody, not just female readers, but also families, kids, and so forth. So that's really good. Yeah.
I've certainly noticed a massive change in the welcoming environment of direct market shops since the 90s, you know, because like, I think, and I was guilty of this too when I was younger, is you felt like you were part of this club, this comic book club, and you were leery of other people because you felt it was so special and you wanted to maintain it. You wanted to keep it special. And so it became popular or somebody walked into the store because they had just started watching the Mantis TV show, you were like, oh, you're like, I don't know if you're going to be in the shop. And that's just, like, it's just so not who I am now, thankfully. Yeah. And it's like you're saying, it's not how the industry is and the comic book shops in our neck of the woods now. Even that shop has progressed greatly.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. And I'm glad that comic book shops, you know, have changed over time. And I think the thing is too, that, and they need to, especially now, they need to, you know, in order to stay in business, because now the internet is available. It's like, well, you know, I can go to DCBS to get I can order my comic through them, cheaper price, you know?
Yeah. And like in the 90s, when it like, you know, that early 90s, there was so much of an influx of the speculator market. Yes. You can kind of understand why some people were skeptical of people coming in and wanting to buy like 20 copies of some chromium cover or whatever. Mm-hmm. But now like that market doesn't exist and the industry needs every hand and dollar that wants in.
Yeah. All right. So I'm sorry. I'm going to continue on. While you guys were growing up, Brad, I know that you said that you're reading Spider-Man. You got into Spider-Man. Lisa, I know you said that you're reading Watchmen and Sandman. What were you guys watching? What other comic book series were you reading? What other things were you guys collecting while you guys were growing up? You know, whether it's in, you know, from elementary school, high school, college, young adult.
collecting, like as a kid, it was just the monkeys and tiny tea sets. I did collect those. And I was very much into musicals. Then as I'm one of four kids. Uh-huh. And so there's not a lot of room to really spread out and collect some stuff. Not like Brad, who is an only child. And so he had two to three bedrooms in his own home, full of his collections. Then I guess in college, I started getting more into movies.
Music, lots of CDs.
Oh, yeah. And I did. I was into music, and I was also very much into stand-up comedy. So I would collect stand-up comedy records and CDs. Uh-huh. Yeah. And I would illegally download music in college. That was my college years.
Napster girl.
Yeah. And now I'm collecting everything. Brad's really he's guided me into the world of collecting things.
Yeah, I mean, because like I started buying Kenner action figures when I was an infant, or my parents started buying toys for me when I was like a really, really young kid. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I have photos of when I was like, you know, 2 years old, gripping, stormtroopers and what have you. And I never stopped buying action figures. There was like a brief period when we moved to Virginia where I was like, oh, I'm a big boy now. I don't want to buy toys. But then I found another comic book shop in Fairfax, and they were selling vintage Star Wars toys. So in middle school, I started rebuying the Kenner action figures that I had sold off in garage sales. And so I rebought the entire Star Wars line from the New Hope toys all the way to like the Power of the Force stuff. And then like Kenner, or it became Hasbro, started putting out new Star Wars toys in the 90s as a buildup to the Phantom Menace. And then like, I just started buying all of those. And like I said, Transformers and G.I. Joes. And you know, to this day, I'm buying Marvel Legends action figures. I can't help myself.
I grew up kind of like in a conservative family. So a lot of that like pop culture marketing just kind of whiffed me. I didn't.
Yeah.
Like I watched Goonies as an adult. Like and that shouldn't be.
My dad was a sports guy and he always wanted me to be a sports guy. And so we would go to like comic book shops because they would also have like baseball cards and things like that. But my mom was a movie maniac. And so once I whittled her down and I was like, okay, I can watch the R-rated stuff. Once I got her to show me RoboCop and Rambo First Blood Part 2, like we bonded very much on film and science fiction and all of that stuff. And they eventually just let me watch whatever I wanted as long as we would have a conversation about it.
So, and then my own parents don't watch a movie if it's not PG. And they're in their 80s. So
yeah.
So I'm still not allowed to watch rated R movies according to them.
No,
but I'll
not.
Sneak one every
That's
once
right.
in a while.
That's right. But yeah, so like that I've always been pop culture obsessed.
Mm-hmm.
And when Lisa and I got together and we started dating, I remember the first time she found out that I had purchased an action figure and she thought it was cool.
So cool.
And I was like, oh, I don't have to be like secretive about buying, McFarlane toys or whatever. And then like that unleashed the floodgates to where we are now, where like I had been given permission by my girlfriend to let loose, and I have let loose, and she has purchased quite a few herself.
Yeah. First off, Brad, I think that's amazing that you connected on your parents on a different level with your dad. Not only that, hey, I know Brad loves to read. He loves that comic shop. Let's go to that comic shop. Hey, that comic shop has sports cards and also baseball and also football cards, because I remember that was big back in the 90s. And then with your mom, with her movies, what's really great is not only did she, she finally goes, okay, we'll let you start watching R-rated movies, but you guys have a conversation afterward.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it was very important because my dad would generally take me to the films, the R-rated movies. And my dad did not like violent movies at all. He found them really upsetting and disturbing, but he would take me to go see them. And so we would go to From Dusk Till Dawn.
Oh,
and I remember watching From Dusk Till Dawn with my dad in 1995. I'm 15 years old. Mm-hmm. And my dad would periodically look down at me disapprovingly. And I would look up at him with a great big smile on my face. Like, I like all of this stuff that's going on in this movie. And afterwards, on the car ride home, he would lecture me about why the movie was bad. But he would also want to know why I thought it was good. And we would argue, sometimes to the point of Brad crying. And you know, his favorite word was the word gratuitous. Mm-hmm. But he never stopped taking me to the movies, and we never stopped talking about the movies.
Yeah.
I really cherish that.
Oh, my, yeah, but that's, like I said, it's really great that you guys were, you know, able to express your points of view. You know, like I said, I just really think that's really awesome. Because yeah. I'm sure, because I'm not a parent, you know, we don't have children, but
same.
You know, if we had kids, I think I would have to talk to my kids to make sure that, you know, this is a movie. Remember, you can't do this. You know, you have to remember this, you know, or you just can't let, you know.
It's funny that we're talking about this because my parents have been vaccinated now, and we were able to like get together and have like a little like meeting not too long ago, and been like so long since we'd had a meeting, like a little meeting. It was a lunch. Like, we're not getting business. But we were able to get together, and Lisa had been asking me, why did my parents let me see all these violent things? Because we had just watched together. Lisa had never seen the Sylvester Stallone movie Cobra.
Oh, yeah.
And so we watched that the other night. We then went to visit my parents. And, you know, I have like a very vivid, I don't want to bore you with all the stories, but I have a very vivid memory of watching Cobra as a kid at my grandparents' house. And my dad went to rent that movie for me and had to tell the guy at the deli, because it was it was in England. My mom's from England. And so we were in England, in Devon, and there was a corner store that also rented films. And I went down there and I tried to rent Cobra. And the guy's like, no, I'm not renting it to this 11-year-old or whatever. I was 12-year-old. And I went and I got my dad, and I brought my dad to the Devon corner store, two Americans. And my dad's like, my kid, what's in this movie? And the guy's like, well, it's got blood, it's got sex, it's got adult themes. And my dad's like, he can handle it. So we rented Cobra, went back to my grandparents' house. I watched it in my grandmother's bedroom on her bed. And the moment that movie opened with the Axe Gang, I was terrified. But I watched the whole thing, but I watched it through like closed fingers. And so Lisa and I are watching this movie, and I'm retelling her this story. I'm retelling her like my terror at watching this story when I was a little child in England. And Lisa goes like, why did your parents let you watch all this stuff?
Well, what makes me so curious is the fact that Brad and I, after being married for 12 years or
14,
whatever.
Lisa.
14 years. Is like...
Well, we've been together 14.
Our tastes the Venn diagram of our taste is not a complete circle, but we're more or less just the same person. We enjoy a lot of the same movies. And I just think it's so funny that our upbringings are so different, because like in my house, like the MPAA rating was like literal. Like, you were not allowed to watch a PG-13 movie until you are 13.
Right. Uh-huh.
And you have to get some parental guidance. We would actually check our diocesan newspaper to check to see if the movie we were watching was approved by the Catholic Church.
Oh my God. My
little brother thought that the Pope's job was to watch all of the movies. So our upbringings are just so different. And I think it's so funny that despite our completely opposite upbringings, we grew up to be more or less the same person.
Well, yeah, certainly like taste range or what have you. But so we went and had lunch / a meeting with my parents the other day. And Lisa asked my mom, like, why did you let Brad watch Cobra when he was 12 years old? And my mom said, and I had not heard this story before, but she said she remembered me watching the news when I was a child, and I couldn't stay in the room when a scary, real life, violent story was being told on the news. I had to exit the room. And my mom took that as he understands the difference between reality and fiction. And that's why she said yes, because I found the news scary. I was like, okay.
That makes sense, though. I think that's good parenting.
That is, no, but that's really good. That's, you know, because it, like, And sorry, Brad.
No, go ahead.
I hope I'm not offending you, but it's really good that you're able to distinguish, you know, at a young age, you know, what's real and what's not real. You know?
I think that kids, I mean, we don't have kids, but I do think that they're just tiny adults without life experience.
I think it's different for every child.
Yeah.
I was at a very young age, and because of Star Wars, and really Star Wars was the only thing that I had access to because it was so popular. You would have behind the scenes books and, you know, little TV episodes or what have you. And I was obsessed with like Ralph McQuarrie's paintings. I was obsessed with Phil Tippett as a monster maker, putting the Rancor together. Yeah. And so I carried that like curiosity all the way through high school. And I started reading Fangoria magazine, things like that. And so I was always interested in how the fiction was made. Mm-hmm. And I think my parents saw that. And again, it reinforced the idea that I understood there was a difference between a person really getting hurt and Arnold Schwarzenegger throwing a buzz saw through a guy, you know?
Oh, yes. I remember, I think that was the scene from Commando.
Correct.
Right in the shed, right? He's the in wood the shed. There's nothing. And yep, he's got the saw blade, throws it.
Yep, discus.
I'm going to, actually, you know what? When you guys start to talk about like you guys start to meet up on stuff, I'm going to start asking the question, can you guys please talk about how you guys met?
Well, I remember the second I met Lisa. She doesn't.
I don't. And the reason is Brad had mutton chops at the time. And I feel like mutton chops is the facial hair that makes you invisible to women.
Whatever. but I needed to get a job. And I applied for a bookseller position at Barnes & Noble in Reston, Virginia. Rest in peace, because that bookstore is no longer there. And Lisa was already working there. This was 2007. And I got hired on, I was supposed to be part-time, but they hired me on full-time to be the bargain lead. I was in charge of all the bargain books at the Reston Barnes & Noble. And I took to that job fairly quickly. Like, you know, like I said, the first day I applied, I saw Lisa and I recognized Lisa. I was like, this person's cool. And then I became the music manager after like 3 months. Mm-hmm. And then I got my own little like kingdom. I get to run the shop inside the shop.
Yes.
And Lisa was one of the booksellers who would come in and help me scan the CDs and realphabetize and rearrange. And we hit it off while chatting in the music department. Is that correct, Lisa?
That is correct.
Yeah. But when do you remember seeing me in the bookstore?
I don't know. To me, it started to become my routine to say hi to Brad in the music department. And I would always make sure that whenever I came and left from my shift to say hi and bye to Brad.
Because the music department at that store was like this little box within the box on the far left. And so employees would pass it on the way to, what do you call it when you punch in? The punch-in machine?
Yeah. We've been out of retail for so long.
It's been a while. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so people would always pass me, but Lisa would always pass me and go like, hi, Brad. And we had this big wall that I could barely see over. Mm-hmm. But Lisa would say, hi, Brad. And I'd see a little hand. It's an exaggeration a little bit.
But. Yeah. And there was this like little group of booksellers that would hang out after hours. And Brad hung out with that group. And so I would join that group. But then it turns out that we were just hanging out with those people so that we could hang out with each other. And we discovered that we could hang out without those other people. And then we did.
And then we stopped. We stopped going to that bar.
And then we were dating. And that was how it happened.
Yeah. That is so amazing, because it's kind of nice because, Brad, for, you know, because Barnes & Noble, of course, I'm sure you've gone through their trade and hardcover section looking through, you know, just your love of comics and read.
I sold Kanye West The Dark Knight Returns Absolute Edition at that Reston Barnes & Noble.
That's correct.
Wait, I'm sorry. Wait. Try me that again. What was that again?
I sold Kanye West Batman The Dark Knight Returns Absolute Edition when he was on tour. He, you know, we're near D.C., so he was playing at the Staples Center that weekend. And he came into our store to buy a ton of graphic novels and a bunch of magazines. And I remember, so I was in the music department, right? And my manager, Darlene, shout out to Darlene. I miss her so much. She paged me and she's like, Brad, Kanye West is looking at magazines. I was like, Darlene, Kanye West is not looking at magazines in the rested Barnes & Noble. Brad, it's Kanye West. All right, hold on one second. Let me get somebody to cover my shift. And so I pulled a bookseller of lower rank to cover music department so I could go meet Darlene to see if it was Kanye West. And as we're rounding the corner in the history section, I literally bump into Kanye West's bodyguard, who was like this big linebacker dude. And there he was in a little hoodie. He had a hoodie pulled up over his head and he had a Frappuccino purchased from the Starbucks. And Darlene goes, are you? And he just raises his finger to his lips and goes, shh. Where are your comics? And then I took him to the graphic novel section and he bought multiple baskets of comics, including The Dark Knight Returns. And he left that Frappuccino on top of the graphic novels. He left and that Frappuccino spilled, poured down all the graphic novels, and we had to return hundreds of dollars of graphic novels. So he spent $300 and we ended up having to return $300. And yes, I kept that cup.
For a little bit, he did.
That's pretty cool.
It was a weird day.
That is the coolest Barnes & Noble story. The closest I have is I did sell 2 Bibleopolies when Monopoly was coming up with all of those versions of Monopoly to Joe Gibbs.
Oh, yeah. The
coach of the Redskins.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Not the same.
Lauren Graham from Gilmore Girls also used to shop there.
Yeah, I wasn't there then either.
Sorry.
That is pretty.
It's a wild, it's one of my favorite memories because it was just so bizarre. I was so confident that was no way Kanye West was in our store, and then there he was. And then so much else happened after that.
I think it's cool that you guys, you know, met and fell in love at Barnes and Nobles. Your love for Brad, your love for reading, and Lisa, your love for music, especially for you to come over as from the book side to help Brad with the CDs.
I loved Brad. I thought he was a very cool guy. I also really liked doing inventory. Uh-huh. So if there was a job where I got to just use the scanner, I was really excited.
Yeah.
I also like to be in, I like to receive books in the back.
The music department was like such a special thing for a little while until the CD sales went completely away. But like it was like my own high fidelity, you know, like I ran that entire business and it felt like owning my own shop. It's the closest I ever had to owning my own shop and I cherished it. And it was fun, like when you would have employees like Lisa join you, because usually you only had the payroll to have one person in that department. Mm-hmm. But every now and again, you get a little extra payroll to do a project. And man, did I like that was like Lisa became my Jack Black for like a few hours. It was so great. I missed it. Honestly, I do. Yeah.
So I know you touched on a little bit. I'm going to ask the question. So, and what I mean, you touched up on a little bit were, what was your reaction when you guys found out that you guys pretty much almost had the same interests? Because I know you talked about the action figure part.
You wanted, Lisa and I, like our earliest dates were centered mostly around movies. Mm-hmm. But I do remember, like when the comic books became a thing between the two of us. Mm-hmm. And correct me if I'm wrong, Lisa, but I think it's when we visited the Baltimore comic book convention that first time. And we went to various artist tables and got things signed. And I think that's where like we discovered that we both really enjoyed comic books.
Yeah. Well, Brad, when we were dating, like one of his first like, okay, this feels like a test was when he handed over Hellboy to me. Mm-hmm. And like for a person who's not an extremely seasoned comic book reader, Hellboy can be a challenging read, I found. But I really put a concerted effort into following the sequential storytelling and really enjoying and appreciating that book. And it turned me into a Mignola fan like right away. And Mignola always was at Baltimore, and Was he? I guess Awesome Con didn't happen until like later.
No, and I don't think he's ever been at Awesome Con.
Yeah, so. Yeah. So our first stop was always Mignola's table, and I was just so stoked to meet him.
And then when we started going to San Diego Comic Con, we'd always hit up his table.
Yeah, we'd always hit up his table too. Yeah. So even though I had read some comics, mm-hmm. I wouldn't call myself a comics fan mm-hmm. until we started dating. Mm-hmm. And then early in our marriage, I was like, I'm living surrounded by, and like I had read all of the like Ultimate Spider-Man.
Yeah. And you had read all of Hellboy by that.
And I'd read all of Hellboy. Mm-hmm. And I picked around here and there, but I was like, do you know what? I want to put a concerted effort into reading comics. So we started a comic book club it started with just people from Barnes and Noble. Mm-hmm. And like that really kicked up my comic book interest and reading. So, because we were reading a run a month, like at least one or two volumes of a collected comic.
And the group was a group of curious readers, mm-hmm. people who were like Lisa, who had seen the movies and wanted to explore a little bit more. And so that was kind of like the motivation for selecting comics. And when it started, I would pick the titles for the group with the idea of like, okay, you like the X-Men movies. What's an X-Men comic that we could pair with that love? And the first meeting was the Astonishing X-Men Joss Whedon, John Cassidy comic. And then like the next one was like, okay, you like Batman movies. What's the Batman comic? And then we picked Jeff Loeb and Tim Sale's The Long Halloween.
Oh, yeah.
And that's where I really discovered what I liked to talk about when it came to comics.
Yeah.
Like I love talking about the relationships and I love talking about their inner motivations. Like I really read comics and I still do like soap operas, like deep character studies.
And you treat their actions like they are their actions. Not that they are being written, but like that is what Spider-Man did this week.
The idea of continuity, if you come to comics, if you don't grow up with the idea of a character can cross over into another book. Like if, you know, all of the sudden there was like a Ramona Quimby, you know, Prairie Home Companion crossover. I don't know why I said Prairie Home Companion.
I don't know why either, but that would be amazing.
That would be wild. Like it just wasn't a thing that happened. So like, I just loved this idea of what makes the character, mm-hmm. transcendent of who's the writer, who's the artist, what is the essential person that is Spider-Man or Remy LeBeau or Abe Sapien. Like that's was just so fascinating to me.
Mm-hmm.
And that really is what stoked my love of comics. And now I've been reading comics for like forever,
14 years,
14, 15 years.
That's pretty good. That is pretty amazing. Wait, so correct me if I'm wrong, so you guys have been married for 12 years, right?
12 years, 2009.
We got married in 2009. Mm-hmm. And then we dated for like 2 years before that.
Okay, so, and the reasons why I'm going to be asking the next couple questions, because, you know, for most of us fanboys, you know, we're comic book collectors, but our wives are not, you know? And sometimes they'll, and I thank God my wife supports my habits. Yes, I am calling it a habit. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not going to any, you know, AA meeting or anything, you know? No, but you know, for you guys, you know, I'm going to start like asking you, like, for you guys, when you guys buy comics, do you guys buy separate copies or one copy and you guys just both read it?
We did buy two separate copies. And part of it is because I'm going to scandalize some of your listeners and I hate to do it, but part of the reason I became interested in comic books in the first place, like going into the shop and going like, I want to open a box, is I loved the idea of serialized media that is disposable. Mm-hmm. So you go in and you buy your floppy comic and then you go to Ellie's Deli and you eat a sandwich over your comic and you turn the pages. And then if you love the story, you keep it. And if you don't love the story, you toss it in the trash. And so I did not grow up with the bag and board mentality. And like, I am a destructive entity. So Brad was a little shocked and appalled when he saw the way that I handled paperback books and floppy comics, to the point where it just wasn't fun for me to share floppies with him. But
fair, that's fair. We and for a little while we did do like, we'll buy doubles.
But you know what? That's not very financially feasible.
It's not.
Yeah.
And so I have tried to, you know, hold back on my more monstrous comic book handling habits.
You're doing a good job.
And but also, Brad, I think that your relationship to your comics has also evolved.
Yes. You know, I, as a 90s kid, was very much into buying and collecting comics with the idea that they were going to financially support me somehow in the future.
Yeah.
So, you know, like I had all the polybag Death of Superman comics that you mm-hmm. could possibly have, a long box of them, right? Mm-hmm. I had every version, X-Men number one, and yes. they were going to be worth so much money. Every Image comic, every Valiant comic. I remember buying Turok the Dinosaur Hunter's first appearance within, oh gosh, is it Magnus Robot Fighter? I think so. So I amassed, I amassed a mass of comics, a ton of comics. Mm-hmm. And they're still mostly in my parents in long boxes, if we're all going to be real honest on this podcast.
Oh, yeah.
But when Lisa and I got married, my relationship with books changed. I did sell off some comics to pay for vacations and what have you. Yeah. And once I started doing that, I started to love buying modern comics, like Lisa's saying, and then going to a restaurant or sitting outside and cracking the spine and reading it while I was drinking or whatever. And honestly, I do very little bagging and boarding today. I work in before 2020, I would occasionally work at a comic book shop, and they had these gorgeous spinner racks, and they replaced them, and they were going to throw away the old ones. And I was like, I'll take those. And so I took a spinner, and it's in my office, and it's my favorite way to display comics. Is it good for those comics? No. Mm-hmm. It's terrible for the comics if you want them to appreciate in value. But it is my preferred way of reading and displaying now. Don't worry. I'm not putting, like, you know, old Jack Kirby comics in the spinner rack, if you're listening. I'm not doing that. I'm putting, like, you know, the latest issue of Usagi Yojimbo or whatever.
But we do really think about our comics as ours. We don't think about having our comics that it could be released back into the wild at an appreciated price.
Yeah, and what I've started doing is I've started giving comics away to people who would like them.
Yeah.
And, you know, for our podcast, for our patrons, I'll even do care packages for folks, and I'll put some really good goodies in there. Some odd stuff, you know, like the occasional weird Valiant Image crossover book, Deathmate. But I'll also throw in like a cool Brave and the Bold and some of the new modern stuff too.
And he's learned to accept that sometimes, just like people, sometimes we hurt the ones that we love, and we can't keep all of our comics in perfect condition all of the time.
That is true. That is true. Lisa right now is reading through Invincible, the Robert Kirkman, Corey Walker, Ryan Otley comic, currently streaming on Amazon Prime as a cartoon series. Yeah. And, you know, I love those hardcovers that Image put out of them. Mm-hmm. And for like the longest time, like when I was real young and dumb in my marriage, I would be like, okay, Lisa, like, I don't like to crack the spine. this is the way I like to read it. I like to read
it's
at this angle.
It's just not fun. Like, how can you even read a book like that?
Yeah. So I've let go of those more collectory habits.
Yes.
And now I watch Lisa read Invincible, and I just go like, this is awesome.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So yeah, everything is ours. There's not like Brad's corner or Lisa's corner, Brad's books and Lisa's books. And I've just had to mature a little bit.
No, but what's really nice, again, is that balance, because, you know, for me, I still have the little bit of that collector in me, but yet, and, you know, I'm just going to be blunt and honest. Comics are meant to be read.
Yes. That's what I was trying to say earlier. Yes.
Yeah.
Well, comics are meant to be read.
That's all it is. You know, who cares if Punchline appears, you know, in Batman 90 it's a comic book to be read.
Right.
And I'm going to tell listeners, you know, there's times where it's like, yes, I do buy two issues on some stuff because I think I'm speculating, but most of the time it's just to be read and to be enjoyed too, because that's what it is. It's just to be enjoyed.
Yeah. And that's very much my point of view right now. I have not bought a quote unquote old comic in a long time. It's been years, maybe even a decade since I bought a classic comic. If I were to suddenly fall into a giant pile of Scrooge McDuck money, mm-hmm. I would probably try to fill in some gaps in my collection. I've mentioned Jack Kirby briefly, but like I'm a Jack Kirby obsessive. I would like to have, you know, all the Fantastic Four stuff, but I'd have to be like a millionaire to have all the Fantastic Four stuff. And like Spider-Man, like I would love to collect that stuff, but I just can't.
You guys first went to Baltimore Comic Con. Can you guys tell me how did that come? How did that conversation come up? Like, hey, Lisa, you want to come with me to this convention?
I think it was like
exactly
that.
Like that.
It was exactly like that. You know, like we were looking for things to do early on in our dating life. We would play putt-putt. We'd go bowling.
Uh-huh.
We'd go to the movies. And then, you know, like when that Baltimore convention came up, that was a convention that I used to go every year until like work started to get in the way. And I cherished the Baltimore Comic Book Convention. And we went and like we had a ton of fun. But Lisa also saw that there is a different version of Brad when he goes to a convention.
Conrad.
There is Conrad, who is a little more anxiety inducing, maybe, because I have like a strategy. There's, you know, I want to hit up every table. Yes. I want to do it in a certain way. I'm a little anal retentive. And it took like a few conventions. It took a few years for Lisa and I to fall into a rhythm.
Yeah, because it would just be Brad walking off into the distance. Mm-hmm. And I really didn't have, like, I had never been to a convention before. And I really wanted to get in there and look around and engage with each of the, you know, vendors. And I wanted to flip through in kind of like a casual way through the floppies and stuff like that. And I really had to, and Brad, he's like, well, if you want to stop, you should just tell me that you want to stop. Right. And I'm like, well, I that's just not like, I shouldn't have to, you should. Like, I'm having to read your body language for where you would like to stop. And so you should be also cognizant of me as a person and read my body language to tell when I want to stop and look at something.
And, like, it took years for mm-hmm. us to sort of, like, figure out, or for, I would even say for Brad to figure out how to behave with Lisa at a convention. And it was because of the San Diego Comic-Con.
But then as I got more and more into comics, I had my own things that I wanted to do and my own
right.
books that I wanted to find and people that I wanted
right.
to meet. And so,
what we do now is we usually, like the last convention we went to was San Diego, I think right?
It was.
Like 20, was it 2019?
Yeah, because then, everything shut down in March.
Yeah. So by the time we get to that convention, you know, Lisa's got the things she's looking for. She's got the panel she wants to go to. I have my stuff. But we usually plan that out before the convention even starts and say like, okay, well, we'll spend this day apart and then this day together and things like that.
Yeah. Yeah. We're not trying like, we can split up and do our own thing.
But
and
it
come
took
back
a while for me to even understand that.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And it took me a while to feel confident enough to operate in that space on my
sure,
own.
Sure. Sure.
Brad, your first impressions of your first, when you went to any type of convention, what was that experience of life for you?
Well, my first convention was in Philadelphia, and it was probably like 1991. It was pre-Wizard World, but it was where Todd McFarlane was signing, and it was, you could probably figure out the year, because it was Spawn number 2 was out. Mm-hmm. And I went there because I didn't want Spawn number 2 signed. I wanted Amazing Spider-Man number 300 signed. So I brought that in my dad's briefcase,
yes.
His briefcase from work. And I just remember like walking around, like here's like this 13-year-old, 12-year-old kid walking around with a briefcase that had Amazing Spider-Man 300 in it. And, you know, we went as a family. It was my mom, my dad. I remember my mom getting in line to get her photograph with Mr. T, and they had the Spawn Mobile on the show floor. It was when Rob Liefeld had, that giant Bad Rock costume. So you could get in line and get your photo with the Bad Rock. But I remember being in line, and it was Todd McFarlane and Eric Larson, maybe like Hank Canals or something. There was somebody else there, but it wasn't any of the other top artists. And I got to the front of the line, and McFarlane did not want to sign Amazing Spider-Man 300. He was only signing Spawn comics, Spawn 1 and 2. And in my mind, I really started to whine. I can't remember exactly, but in my mind, my memory, I started to whine. And my dad said, oh, come on. And my dad put on his stern voice, which, my dad was a very jovial guy, but when he put on that stern voice, it was scary. And I imagine McFarlane just quaked in his boots and agreed. And he signed my Amazing Spider-Man 300, which I have to this day.
Lisa, what was your first reaction to the, and correct me if I'm wrong, is the Baltimore Comic Con with Brad. What was your first reaction to that convention?
I just loved it. Even though I wasn't a comic book nerd yet, I was just a baby comic book nerd. I've always been a fan of being with people who are passionate about something. I am addicted to enthusiasm.
Yes.
I just love to see what makes people light up and get excited and get dressed up and make new friends. I just love that. And I really wanted to be a part of it. I love conventions. I'll go to a convention for anything. Let's be real.
That's true. Yeah. Yeah. And we're desperate to go back to a convention at some point in the future.
Yes. And yes, soon. I'm same thing like me. I'm itching to go back to a convention, but I'm looking for next year, 2022.
That's probably accurate.
Maybe if New York.
I don't see it happening this year, Lisa.
Yeah, probably not.
And I'll be honest, I just cannot imagine if they do New York. For me, it wouldn't be fun because you have to wear your mask.
Yeah.
Can you imagine trying to stand in line to get someone's autograph? No, sorry, 6 feet apart.
I don't know what
it would even look like.
I don't even like thinking about it because I just don't know what it would be now. Because, the largest convention we've ever gone to is San Diego. And San Diego at its most populated on the show floor, you're on top of people, literally.
You're shoulder to shoulder.
You're shoulder to shoulder with humanity. Uh-huh. And
it's terrible and beautiful.
I love it. I love it. Some people hate it, but I love it. I love being shoulder to shoulder with people. I love lines. I love talking to people in lines. All the things that people say that are negatives about San Diego Comic-Con, I see them as positives. Yeah. But what does that look like now? I don't know. And so I don't want to think about it.
Yeah.
Right. I'm hopeful that we'll be able to go back in some capacity soon.
How many conventions have you guys gone to together?
A lot.
It's hard to count.
Okay, that's
good.
We generally,
in a great year, we'll do Baltimore, San Diego, SPX. And though SPX also conflicts with one of our film festivals that we like to do. Sometimes we would do Philly.
Yeah, we haven't done Philly in a long time.
Yeah, in a long time.
But Baltimore and San Diego were the comic book conventions that we tried to do on the reg. And
we also have Awesome Con now in DC, which is a little baby convention
Well, it's getting pretty big.
It's Awesome getting Con. Big, but.
But yeah, we'll do Awesome Con. I forgot about it. Awesome Con, San Diego, and Baltimore every year, hopefully.
Mm-hmm. What was your guys' favorite convention moment or moments? You guys got more than one, that's fine, just go for it.
You want to go first?
I can go first.
Okay.
So my very first year at San Diego Comic-Con, I wanted to cosplay. Now, I'm not a cosplayer because I'm not crafty, nor am I fit. So
you're not unfit.
But my first San Diego Comic-Con, I did cosplay as a monkey man from the Monkees. I wore Mike Nesmith hat and a red unitard, and I was a monkey man, and it was the best. But the following year, my mom made our Halloween costumes and Easter dresses growing up. So I was like, I got my mom to sew me a Don Greenwood from Silver Surfer, the Dance Lot, Mike Allred Run dress. And I bought the blue wig and the red Converse. And Don Greenwood is my all-time favorite character. She is the kind of character that I aspire to be because her superpower is just wanting to help people. Like, she is not, you know, she doesn't have any gamma radiation or mutation. She's just a human being who wants to help. And I just love that about her. And so, and when you cosplay as her, very few, only the very coolest people know who you are. So you're not really bugged a lot. And so it's just the perfect cosplay for a shy person. So I'm bopping around in my Don Greenwood outfit, having an amazing time. Mm-hmm. And Brad goes like, hey, there's a guy dressed as Silver Surfer who's like the opposite of me. He's like a beefcake.
Like super jacked, very muscly.
Amazing, even silver paint all over his body. More of a Jack Kirby fan. He had no idea who Don Greenwood was. So is he a Silver Surfer fan? I don't think so. But I went up to him.
We're not gatekeeping, Lisa.
And so I went up to him and we got a cute picture together. And Brad posted it on Twitter. And we had one of the editors from Marvel.
Tom Brevoort.
Tom Brevoort was the one who saw it?
Yeah, yeah.
I thought it was either him or was it...
Alana. I think Tom Brevoort saw it first, but then Alana made the connection.
Yeah, so Tom Brevoort saw it and was like, this is amazing. And Alana reached out to us and said, hey, can we use your picture of you and Silver Surfer in Silver Surfer 200 because it's coming out? And I was like, yes, you absolutely can. So all I need is you and Silver Surfer, the guy playing Silver Surfer's permission. And I was like, oh, he's a stranger. So the next day.
So like this is at San Diego Comic-Con.
There's like 10,000 people
there's
there.
There's more than 10. There's like 300,000
people there. There's a lot of people there. Yeah. And numbers mean nothing to me. just a lot of people. And so the next day, our eyes are peeled.
We have to find
for
the Silver
this
Surfer.
Beefcake. And luckily, I have a good eye for abs. And that day, he was dressed as Bobby Drake.
Yeah, yeah, Iceman, yeah.
And so I ran up to him, and I was like, hey, yesterday, I was Don Greenwood. But anyway, Marvel wants us in their comic book, so would you just make a video with me saying that you give permission to use your photograph? And we took a little video, we sent it over to Alana, and if you find Silver Surfer 200 and you turn to the back, there is a picture of me with my full name and Brad's name because he gets a photo credit for taking the picture.
Yeah, so my name is finally in a Marvel comic.
So that's kind of an unbeatable story.
It's a pretty good one.
So you can tell your story now. It's less cool.
It's not as good as that. It's not as good as that. I have so many great comic convention stories, and that's certainly up there. That's probably my number one, too, if I was being honest. I think about, you know, the various types of conventions. You know, you go to Small Press Expo. It's a different type of audience. It's a different type of talent there. The last time I was there, I got to chat for a good portion with Eddie Campbell, the illustrator behind From Hell, the Alan Moore Jack the Ripper comic. And he was so nice, and he signed it, and he drew a Jack the Ripper inside my copy of From Hell. And, like, I cherish that thing. San Diego-wise, I mean, like, I love going back to Mike Mignola's table every year, mm-hmm. chatting with him.
He's such a
getting
nice
something
guy.
Signed, buying a print. Like that routine that you get by going back to your favorite people over and over again. Like, I think that's just such a unique and special relationship that if you're not in comics, you don't quite have. And it's hard to explain to people who don't do conventions what that's like to, you know, return to your favorite artists and talk to them every year in a format like that. And like, I'm really trying to find like another like a gangbuster story like Lisa, but I just don't think I can. Mm-hmm. Not comic book wise, but movie-wise, at the San Diego convention when Star Trek Beyond came out,
I
was writing for TrekNews.net, and they had got me into the IMAX premiere of Star Trek Beyond.
With a full orchestra.
With a full orchestra and a light show played outside. But I only had one pass. And I'm there with my wife, and I'm like, well, I'm going to this movie premiere.
And I had preview night tickets, so I was like, I could have gone to preview night.
But you
were doing something infinitely cooler.
You were like a little bummed out. And there was a massive line to get into this event. And I said, Lisa, I think if you just hang out with me, we both can get in on this one pass.
And I'm like, I'm a rule follower. Yeah. I was super anxious about
it. And like, ethically... it's probably not the greatest thing, and I shouldn't be like saying that I did this, but we did, and we got Lisa in, and it turns out there were actually lots of extra seats, so we didn't take anyone's seat from the Star Trek Beyond IMAX premiere, but we got in, and we watched Star Trek Beyond under the night sky with the cast, second row. Conan O'Brien was hosting, Nichelle Nichols was there, Chris Pine, Zachary Quinto, Zoe Saldana, Carl Urban, they were all there doing the red carpet thing. And I just remember like turning to Lisa going like, we got it. And feeling like we had accomplished something great. So that's a pretty good memory. Even if I'm like, should I have done that?
Yes, you should have.
I feel weird admitting it. But like I said, like once we got in, there was like plenty of seating for other people.
But the chairs were so small, but I felt so guilty that I had snuck in that like somebody tried to leave like a courtesy seat in between us, like me and the stranger. And I was like, no stranger, sit right next to me practically on my lap because I should not be here.
Yeah, we got very comfortable with everyone that day. And that was great because like everyone... in that front row, those front two rows were like big time Trekkies like us. And
we just talked Trek. It was just
the best. Yeah. And then the movie started when we were quiet. And that was also like, you know, right before that movie came out is when Anton Yelchin passed away.
Yeah.
And so they had this very sweet and loving tribute to him before the show where the cast spoke and they had like a little special musical tribute with the orchestra there. Then they did this light show to him, and it was just very moving, and as like a lifelong Trek fan, it was
really cool.
Special.
Okay, so I'm gonna go off the cuff, so you guys are, so you're a lifelong Trek fan. Lisa, correct me if I'm wrong, are you a lifelong Trek fan?
Nope. I'm not. I liked the Monkees. Yes. Same era,
1966.
But I just didn't get into Trek either until we were married.
But you're a big time Trek person.
Yeah,
now. And we argue over what's the best Star Trek
series. It's DS9.
No, it's the original series.
No, but it's DS9.
DS9's really good.
It's my favorite.
You like DS9.
Okay, I'm going to tell you guys this. On certain days, I will say the original series, the first two seasons.
Yeah.
On other days, it's Deep Space Nine.
Yes.
And that's where I am too. I love all of them.
Yes.
Voyager is the only one I haven't seen every episode. And the only reason I haven't seen every episode is because once I see every episode, I've seen every episode of Star Trek, and I don't want that to be the case.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. But thankfully, they're now making new Star Trek and watching all that stuff.
Okay, so I'm going to ask you, Brad, what do you like about the original series?
Oh, the original series. So I came to Trek with the movies, the original crew movies, and, you know, Star Trek IV. For the longest time was probably my favorite movie as a kid. And now it's probably Star Trek II. We're talking favorite movies. And I just adore that cast. And then Next Generation came out. And I remember when that premiered and we were in California at the time. And so we would go to Universal Studios. We'd try to get in on tapings at Paramount and stuff like that, but we never did.
Yeah.
Tapings as if it was in front of a live studio audience, a tour of the set is what I mean. And like, I just always loved Trek. I didn't come to the original series until I was in college after I was already in love with the films. And what I love about that show is one, like Lisa's saying, the era, like 60s sci-fi television, I think is just really, really interesting. The production design, the special effects, but that the performances from Leonard Nimoy, William Shatner, and DeForest Kelly, like those three guys on that show, you just I just connected so much with them. Mm-hmm. And it was like this reverse engineering where I brought my love of them from the films into their portrayals on the TV show. Mm-hmm. And so I felt like I just had like an even fuller grasp of who they were as characters as I was watching the original series for the first time. And I think it's like, it's adventure, you know, it's not perfect in its progress, you know, but like the basic idea of striving to be better. Yes. Of going out there and reaching for the stars, to exploring unknown regions, meeting new people, trying to relate to new people, even if they're shooting phasers at you, yeah. Those pesky Romulans. I love the philosophy that's behind the original series that is there in the films, and in certain films it's more prevalent than others. Uh-huh. I think, like, as much as I love Wrath of Khan, I think Wrath of Khan sort of made the film franchise about, like, let's go punch this film's villain. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes they just sort of fell into replicating the Khan plot.
Yeah.
But then, like, you take it into Next Generation and DS9 in particular, where it really embraces the social conversation. Yes. In DS9. Like, that's what I want stories to be doing. Stories are reflections of our world around us and are speaking to our concerns. Yes. And, you know, Star Trek, Twilight Zone, mm-hmm. That's like the best type of fiction.
Lisa, what do you like about Deep Space Nine?
So my introduction to Trek was my friend Chrissy was into Next Gen. And to me, Next Gen, everybody was just getting along too well. Like, yeah. And so when I got introduced to DS9, and there was so much more of the human drama, mm-hmm. like to see, you know, Benjamin Sisko struggle with parenting and self-doubt, or, you know, Odo going like, you know, I have to learn to relate to others and I have to encourage others to relate to me.
And I don't even know what I am.
It, like, to me, the human drama was really what drew me into Deep Space Nine. And the fact that it was like, it was leaning more towards having a story arc that goes throughout the season.
Yes.
Like where it wasn't, because it wasn't so episodic, the stakes always felt so much greater to me. So DS9, really, it's such a special show to me. And then I would say that, you know, the original series is my second favorite.
Yes. And you've now watched, you haven't seen every episode of Next Gen.
Because I have no patience for it. Let's be real.
But I've curated the best episodes of Next Gen, and you have enjoyed Next Gen. Because we were building up to the release of Picard, and I wanted at least to have like a great understanding of Jean-Luc, mm-hmm. and I think I achieved that.
You did. And we went to the Star Trek 75 in Las Vegas, and that was amazing. And then later at Sundance Film Festival, I got in a fight with Scott Mance about Picard, because I love Picard.
That's right. I forgot about that.
Just me yelling across the tent
like,
at Scott Mance.
Scott Mance from Access Hollywood. Lisa and Scott Mance are literally shouting at each other as we're passing through this tent line to go into a film. I can't even remember what film it was. And Lisa and Scott Mance are just arguing back and forth, and everyone is listening to Lisa and Scott argue about Picard.
But because I do believe that, like, I love the idea of the Idic, and I love the idea of we're failing at being better all of the time, and what makes humanity extraordinary, and what will make us reach like the ideology of a Trek future is for us to try again.
Yes.
You know, it's our failures that make us better. It's not being able to perfectly be the cowboy or be the Vulcan all of the time.
And he was so upset by the path that the Federation had taken between Next Gen and Picard.
But like to me, the idea of the Federation continuing to live inside Picard, just like, you know, our nation, you know, like
Picard's Captain America.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Like this idea of like the Federation is not perfect. The idea of the Federation and the ideals of the Federation can be perfect. We just have to strive. We just have to keep the dream alive.
I'm going to ask, how did you know Scott Mance?
We literally recognized him from going to other conventions.
So we actually met Scott Mance at that Star Trek Beyond screening, and he had hosted it, or he had done the Q&A with Nichelle Nichols. And then the next day we were in the dealer's room, and then there's Scott Mance in the dealer's room. And I was like, Scott Mance. And so we talked about Star Trek Beyond. And then what's that, like 6 years later, we run into him and he's in line with us at Sundance. Lisa and I were working press for that film festival together. And that was just like a really, really wonderful moment where they were arguing about Star Trek.
I think I was right too. I think that everybody in that tent would have agreed with me.
You know, as far as I was concerned. But I also understand what it's like when you love a thing and then that thing changes decades later. Yeah. And you're, and especially when you're watching something episodic, and Star Trek was not used, like the thing about the recent Star Trek stuff, Discovery, Picard, is that it is serialized. Mm-hmm. And yes, DS9 had elements of serialization, but mostly the franchise of Star Trek for 50 years was this episode this week, that episode that week. Mm-hmm. And so when you get into Picard and you're not going to have everything resolved by the end of that episode, you don't get to see what Picard's arc is or what the Federation's arc is until you watch 8 or 9 episodes. Mm-hmm. It's weird for a Trekkie. So I understood why he and others with Discovery and Picard were like, I don't know about this.
Mm-hmm. That's like what I think. I'm just going to put myself, I'm just going to compliment me.
Sure.
Give myself some words of affirmation. Like, whether it's Trek or movies or comic books, what I feel like I bring to the conversation is a lack of nostalgia. Mm. Because in my house, if it wasn't a PG movie, or if it wasn't aired on PBS, I didn't see it. Uh-huh. So, like, I go, like, I feel like I come to comics with a different perspective because I don't have that 12-year-old kid who's like, yeah, but Spider-Man always does this. You know, like, that's what Spider-Man is. True. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yeah, that's and I definitely find that in myself sometimes where it's like, oh, I don't know if Batman would behave that way.
But again, it's nice that you guys balance each other out. You complement each other because, you know, Brad, you know, your deep love for Star Trek, your deep love for comics, and then, you know, Lisa, your recent love for comics, you know, within the last 14 years, Star Trek, and like you said, you don't bring all this baggage with you, you know, which it's very good for your relationship. It's a nice complement to each other.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. And I think it's important for the fandoms, right? Like, if you want Star Trek to go for another 50 years, it has to outlive the original fans' lifespan, right? Yes. And, you know, Batman's been around for 80 plus years. Yeah. And the reason he's been around for 80 plus years is because he's changed.
Yes.
You know, he hasn't been the same thing over the course of those years, even though we all well, Batman should be like the Frank Miller version. No, he doesn't need to be like the Frank Miller version. He can be like Adam West. It's okay.
Yeah.
And you know, I don't have any ego attached to it, you know,
your identity is not attached to it.
Yeah, well, now it is. I have a podcast. I'm wearing the t-shirt, you know, but I don't have that little kid inside of me who gets hurt when they see their hero do something they don't like.
I still do.
Yeah, you
do. I'm working on it.
For me, it's, I think what's for me is that because my wife loves Discovery, you know, and I'm going to say I still struggle with Discovery because it's Star Trek, but it's not my, it's kind of weird. Mm. But I have to say this, when Anson Mount came on as Pike, I'm going, oh my God, that's my Star Trek. But the thing is, but I'm not going to, well, one thing I'll never do to my wife is, oh, this is junk. This is not, if she loves this, I'm going to let her love it. You know, I enjoy bits. There's certain things in Discovery I love, but the other thing too, for me is no matter what, I still have my Star Trek. So
yeah. And that's the thing. You always have that. Yeah. And you know, like Discovery is not an attack on your love of your Star Trek.
Yeah. You know, and the other thing too is that Discovery is for this generation, you know, because 20 years, for example, when Phantom Menace came out, 1999,
Yeah, 1999.
You know, because, I mean, us Star Wars fans were going, Jar Jar Binks, oh my God. Yeah. But I hear stories of, you know, some kid whose first Star Wars movies was The Phantom Menace. They're like, nowadays, they're like, oh, I love Jar Jar Binks.
Yeah.
You know, and it's for me, that's wild, but it's great because they love it.
So I agree. And I was like you in 1999, so much anticipation, tragically disappointed, yes. Hated the new films. But now I look back and I see not only those kids who grew up on it and love Jar Jar Binks and love the clone troopers, I see what the Phantom Menace has birthed in other areas of the universe. The Clone Wars cartoon series is great. Mm-hmm. I love the cartoon series. That's some of my favorite Star Wars stuff now. And you're getting other people beyond George Lucas playing around with his ideas and characters, and they're contributing so much. And so you get to a point where you have stories about Jar Jar Binks within that show and possibly even future iterations where I will understand and like that character. As he was originally presented to me, I didn't know. I was no thank you. But there's opportunity because there's so much, because of the popularity of Star Wars, it's offered such a canvas for other people to play on, to paint on. And comic books. Oh my gosh, Star Wars comic books. Yes, please. Give me all those.
Sorry, guys. I'm going to continue on because I really went off track on the Star Trek and stuff. Sorry, guys.
Okay. I think I did that.
No. All right. Now, in December 1st, 2018, I want to know, how did you guys come up with the Comic Book Couples Counseling Podcast? How did that come about? From idea, format, focus?
Lisa.
Well, we had already been in the podcasting sphere talking, doing a mostly movie-centered podcast called the In the Mouth of Darkness podcast that we do with Darren Smith and Brian Young. And we wanted to create something in our own space, and we knew what it was going to be, something comic books, but we wanted to make sure that we had something, a different perspective on it. And at the time I had gone down the rabbit hole of reading some self-help books, particularly it started with the life-changing habit of tidying up, where I learned that all of my things spark joy and I'm not getting rid of anything. And then I moved on to Gretchen Rubin's books, particularly Better Than Before and The Four Tendencies. And I started thinking in those kind of modalities of self-help books and applying it just in casual conversation to the comic books that we were reading.
Yeah.
And so we just went on a long walk and we came up with the whole concept of applying self-help books to comic book couples. And we even came up with the title Comic Book Couples Counseling. And then we did nothing for like 18 months and we sat on that idea.
And we would talk about it, but then we were like, oh, well, we have to like get a new feed, a new platform, blah blah blah. We've kept finding reasons not to do it
until
we were like, well, why
are those reasons? Literally the only thing that's stopping us is us.
Yeah.
And so we did our very first episode, which was Scott and Jean and the five love languages. And yeah,
just for our listeners, you know, I'm gonna let them know that your first episode for Scott and Jean was released on December 1st, 2018. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then just for the listeners, how many episodes are out right now?
The math is very sketchy because we do a ton of bonus episodes, and we also do what we call creator corners, where we get to talk to really super rad comic book creators. But I guess of our standard format, we have 64 episodes.
But in total, we have 94.
94, yeah.
Yeah.
Close to 100
episodes. We just recorded our 95th episode today.
And that's not including our exclusive Patreon episodes.
And then we have our Patreon, which is like another weekly show, which is a little more loose format, random. Like right now, we're doing breakdowns of every episode of The Falcon and the Winter Soldier on our Patreon.
And then just on the, I guess, like for the regular releases, how often do like new episodes come out?
So the goal is to have a new episode every week.
Okay.
That's not necessarily always the case because Lisa and I have other jobs that we have to do. We have not found a way to make Comic Book Couples Counseling pay our way in life. That is the goal. We accept all advertisers at comicbookcouplescounseling.com. But yeah, so the goal is once a week.
Oh, okay. If you don't mind me off the cuff, what do you and Lisa do for your full-time jobs?
I'll go first because my job is less glamorous. I teach piano and voice lessons, and then I also sing weddings and funerals. So if you are getting married or dead, hit me up. I will sing for you.
She just sang a wedding today.
I did. Oh my God. It's been a big day.
Yeah. And yes, it's been, Lisa, it was a busy day for you because before we started, you guys said you just finished an interview for your show, and now you guys are like literally winding down, or you know, because your guys' time right now is almost...
It's over. Almost 9 o'clock on our end.
Yeah.
All right. And then, Brad, what about you?
I do freelance writing. I am a columnist for filmschoolrejects.com. I'm the senior curator for the Twitter feed One Perfect Shot. And it's mostly movie talk over there. I mostly write movies, although I've started to do some comics criticism. And that's pretty exciting to me. I'd like to do more comics criticism.
You also do reading lists, which I think would interest.
Oh, for Film School Rejects, yeah. I do reading lists. So like whenever like a new Marvel property or a comic book movie comes out, I'll put together a reading list like, hey, if you're excited about Justice League, the Snyder Cut, read these 10 DC comics. If you're excited about Falcon Winter Soldier, read these 10 Falcon Winter Soldier related comics. I love putting those together. More of those.
Because you've already mentioned... You guys do another podcast, correct?
Yeah, that's right. That's the In the Mouth of Dorkness podcast, also known as It Modcast. You can find that on Twitter at It Modcast, ItModcast, or InTheMouthOfDorkness.com. And that's like a bunch of our buds, Darren, Brian, Lisa, myself, just talking movies. What did we watch this week? Let's talk about Godzilla versus Kong, that kind of thing. We do interviews as well. And we did a lot of festival interviews. That's what we were doing at Sundance. Uh-huh. Lisa and I have had Bong Joon-ho on the podcast. We've had Takashi Miike on the podcast. Lots of really cool people that we can't believe we're talking
spoken to.
Yeah. Yeah. So InTheMouthOfDarkness.com.
Okay. For those, I'm just going to go off the cuff real quickly. So was it easy to approach them or did you have to like go through like, no, you got to go to our PR person first.
Yeah,
you go through PR people. So like Bong Joon-ho was at Fantastic Fest as part of the Texas Film Festival. He was promoting Parasite at the time, before it had released. And so you hook up with the festival. They put you in touch with the PR folks. Okay. And then suddenly you're in a room for 15 minutes with Bong Joon-ho. And you're like, okay, I've got 15 minutes. You get the goods.
Hey, I'm coming from the future, and you are going to be very happy with how this movie turns out for your career. Yeah, yeah.
Very much so. Yeah. But we were already fans of his before we had that conversation.
That was so cool.
And that was a pinch me moment. We've had a lot of pinch me moments doing film festival stuff. So yeah, InTheMouthOfDarkness.com. Please go give us clicks there.
And then, you know, for either podcast, what kind of preparations do you guys do for each episode?
There's a lot more preparation going into Comic Book Couples Counseling because Brad does more of the comic book side. He does all of the research about creators. He curates generally which runs we're going to do.
I bring the history of the characters and the publications to every episode, or I try to.
Mm-hmm. And then I curate who our love expert is going to be. And so I'm in charge of reading an entire self-help book alongside of reading whatever comic books. And then
Lisa does so much more work than I do on comic book couples counseling. It's true.
It is true. 100%.
You do more work research because you read an extra book for every couple that we cover. And then you like decipher and analyze that book.
So that I can apply it to the comic book. And it generally works out really well.
Yeah.
But you do a lot of our social media, which I appreciate because that is not my bag. Which if you follow me on Twitter, you will see.
You had a pretty good tweet today.
I did.
And then, like, when you guys have a guest on for the CCC podcast. Mm-hmm. What kind of preparations do you guys do for guests? Like, you know, how do you go about trying to reach out to them and so forth?
I mean, like the comic book side of things, we generally try to just reach out through them, through their websites or through their Twitter feeds. Comic book creators are often much more accessible than film people.
Yes.
So what I learned when I finally got left Barnes & Noble and tried to pursue writing full time, what I learned is if you just ask and put yourself out there, you'll be shocked at how many times people will say, yes, they would like to talk to you or, mm-hmm. you know, offer you a movie to review or a comic book to review or whatever. So like oftentimes I just tell people, just ask as many people as possible. Eventually someone's going to say yes to you. And so with the comic book stuff, we just started reaching out and, you know, we've had really awesome guests on there. Stephen Bissett's been on the show. Kevin Eastman's been on the show. We just had Rob Williams, the Judge Dredd writer, on the show. Mm-hmm. And Lisa and I have very different strategies for preparing for interviews, no matter what the interview is. I tend to just go in with
loosey-goosey, I would say.
I'm very loosey-goosey.
I like to go online. I like to read previous interviews that they've done. I will, of course, read the material and come up with my list of questions, which I put on a table. And then I print it out. And then after I ask a question, I cross it out.
Yep. Yep. Lisa, like she does with the regular episodes, doing a lot of research, she does it for all the interviews as well. And you should have seen her list of questions for Carl Stevens today, the author of Penny. It was impressive.
And that episode is going to be coming out probably within the next week or two?
Yeah, it'll be out Wednesday, which is what? April? It's April something. It's like the 20-something.
It's April
20-something. It's the future.
Yeah, it's in the future. Yeah. Or when people listen to this a year from now, it's in the past.
Yeah, it's in the past.
All right. What was the best episode you guys recorded?
I'm curious to know Lisa's answer to this.
So we generally do our couples as 4-episode series. Mm-hmm. And for me, the Silver Surfer, Don Greenwood arc, those are to me, putting that out on the internet is like just giving the internet a piece of my heart. Yeah. I love those comics.
Yeah.
I loved talking about those comics.
And we were able to cover the entire run of the Dan Slott, Michael Allred storyline, which is something you generally can't do when you're covering Scott and Jean, right? You have to jump around. Mm-hmm.
So those are my personal favorite runs. Though there are little gems in there that I really enjoy. We just put out a one pod stand, mm-hmm. where we didn't do a full series, but we did just one episode about James Howlett and Hercules from Extreme X-Men. And that episode was just so fun.
It was a great episode. I liked it a lot.
I love those two dudes, and I want to watch them kiss.
My favorite episode of Comic Book Couples Counseling that we've done is our third Usagi Yojimbo episode. We focused on Miyamoto and Lady Tomoe, and it was in the storyline Tomoe's story. In particular, issue number 93 of Usagi Yojimbo, where Tomoe creates the tea ceremony and presents the tea to Usagi. And I think that comic is like one of the most bittersweet romantic comics I've ever read. Mm-hmm. And I thought that it sparked a lot of really interesting conversation between Lisa and I about those characters and how it reflects back into our own relationship. So that episode is very special to me.
Of our interviews, our Stephen Bissett interview is hands down my favorite.
That's a lifetime highlight for me.
I was like my heart was changed by our run with Swamp Thing. We paired Swamp Thing with Common's book, Let Love Have the Last Word.
The musician turned biographer.
And you would be surprised what Common and Swamp Thing have in common. And I was really inspired by the idea of Swamp Thing constantly having to rebuild and reinvent himself. Like every time you see Swamp Thing, every cell in his body is different. And I'm like, that's how I want to approach the world. I want to leave Alec Holland behind. I want to be able to be a new person in the present. And so I loved his relationship with Abby, because he, even though Abby was, you know, to us humans, you know, unextraordinary, she was just an ordinary person, he really saw the beauty in her, and he truly shared himself with her.
Yeah, and so we did 4 episodes on Abby and Swamp Thing, and then we got to sit down and chat virtually with Stephen Bissett, the artist of Saga of the Swamp Thing, who worked with Alan Moore and John Totleben.
And he is such a great storyteller, and if you do a lot of research, you can find, like, he has the stories that he likes to tell about that time in his life. But I wanted to get into Abby,
yeah,
and that relationship. And I feel like we got material, we got information out of Stephen Bissett that nobody else has gotten.
Yeah.
And
it took a little while.
Like, yeah, he had
his basic, you know, his go-to stories about the creation of Swamp Thing. But once we got past that, we got some, like, legitimate, exclusive comic book couples counseling content.
And it just felt like such, like, speaking about the love languages, I really felt like Stephen Bissett spent some quality time with us, and it felt really special.
That guy is so smart, and he loves to talk about the thing that he does, and he loves comics. You know, he doesn't just love his comics, he loves all of comics, he loves movies. And so we actually did 2 interviews with him on the same day. He gave us like 5 hours of his time. And we did 1 interview for In the Mouth of Darkness, where he was talking about his new book, which was a dissection of the David Cronenberg film, The Brood. He wrote this 600-page book about the Cronenberg movie, The Brood.
And if you've seen The Brood, you would find that shocking.
I mean, because, like, The Brood is like an 80-minute movie. And he wrote a 600-page book. And you can get it from PS Publishing in the UK. I don't think it's available in the States yet. But it's worth it to get this book. And 2, to talk to him about The Brood. So here you are, you have this genius storyteller in Stephen Bissett talking about another genius storyteller. So we have that interview within the Mouth of Darkness, and then we're talking Swamp Thing and Abby over at Comic Book Couples Counseling. And I got done with those 5 hours, and I was like, well, like, that's it. That's like the highlight. It's not going to get any better than that, really.
Yeah, it was bliss.
It was really great.
Just real quickly for the listeners, can you just in a nutshell, what is the movie The Brood about? Because I'm going to I vaguely remember that movie.
I don't want to spoil The Brood, so I will tell you what The Brood is about without spoiling it. It's a 1979, 1980.
It's around that time.
Yeah, it's a Canadian horror film from David Cronenberg, the guy who made The Fly and The Dead Zone and History of Violence, one of the best comic book adaptations. And it is about a husband who is concerned about his wife. She seems to be going off the deep end, and she is partaking in an experimental psychotherapy process that has disastrous results. And David Cronenberg is a body horror type of director, so his movies tend to be pretty sloppy and gross. Yes. And The Brood goes to some upsetting places. It's called The Brood, so there's children involved.
Mm-hmm. While this couple is having marital distress, there is also a series of unsolved murders.
Yes.
Happening. Yes. In their neighborhood.
Right, right, right. And so it's about anger. It's about, you know, relationships. It's about marriage.
It's interesting, like, from the comic book couples counseling angle, because it is about the price of penting up emotional trauma.
Yeah. It's a movie, like, when you watch it the first time, you're like, this is a pretty low budget, mm-hmm. trashy little film. But if you bring everything you've got to the movie, and if you think about it, and if you forgive maybe some of its budgetary constraints or what have you, or its dated aspects, it's a really powerful movie. And again, like, it spawned 600 pages from Bissett's brain.
Yes.
So that I think right there validates that movie in a lot of ways.
I'm going to start wrapping this up. Okay, so I've got 2 more questions before we go into the fun question part. And also, Brad, thank you very much for at least telling our listeners what The Brood is about, because I remember the poster. Like I said, I can't.
It's a good poster. It's a good poster. It's the Criterion Collection. If you're aware of that, they did a like a really nice Blu-ray special feature set that is worth a blind buy if you like weird horror movies. If you don't like weird horror movies, you might not enjoy it. But if you do, it's essential.
All right. So the final two questions. What are your advice to anyone who wants to start their own podcast? And it doesn't have to focus on comics, you know. Yeah.
Okay.
I would say just do it. Mm-hmm. The great thing about the internet nowadays is that the bar for access is so low. Like, literally, you can do it with your phone, you uh-huh. know? Like, the very first episode of In the Mouth of Darkness podcast, the podcast, you know, that we took to Sundance Film Festival, was recorded on an iPhone with a washcloth over it. So even, like, if you're interested in podcasting, just do it. And then if you go like, you know, I don't like this format or I don't like this show, you can always change what you do later.
Yeah.
You know, you can always, you know, your first podcast doesn't have to be the greatness that is yeah. Comic Book Couples Counseling.
Podcasting is like any creative endeavor. Very humble, Lisa. It's like any creative endeavor. Like the first episodes you do, the first podcast you do is not going to be great. It's a work in progress. So embrace that. The only thing I would add to what Lisa said is that once you launch it, get your friends involved, get them to promote your podcast, find other podcasters who are working in the same field or maybe not even in the same field and become friends with them, see what they're doing, share each other's stuff. But I think it's also important that you have a focus and that you present that focus and it's easy to sell in a sentence or two. And that separates you from what other podcasters are doing. But just do it.
Yeah, just do it.
And if you can't do what I just said, just do it and then figure out what your podcast is as you're doing it. Because that's what we do.
Yeah, like people's like when you're a child and you want to draw, you just take a crayon out and you just start drawing. And I think that as adults, like we feel so reticent to start anything because we think like, well, it's not going to be great. You know, and of course it's not going to be great. Just find that inner child who wants to try something new and just go for it.
Yeah. I mean, if you have a phone, you have a memo app and you can make a podcast with that phone right now. You don't need a board. You don't need even GarageBand. You just have a phone and then you could hook that up to the internet somehow and just upload whatever you got. Make a podcast.
Or do you guys see yourself for your podcast and social media, let's say 5 years from now?
I mean, like for me, I just want to still be doing it.
Yeah. My only aspiration is to have more time to do it.
Yeah. Like it would be nice if we could find more time to do the podcast. My hope is that we are continuing to do it, that we're still talking to really cool people, that people are still listening to our show.
We've also created a really wonderful, fun community around our podcast. Mm-hmm. We have a Patreon where we have a Slack channel where we get to just talk comics with our fellow nerd buddies.
Or and it whatever. Is
literally the best. Yeah. There's a lot of or whatever. Sometimes it's just us showing each other pictures of our pets and it's the best.
Yeah. So I just want to keep doing it. Uh-huh. And maybe we can get Stephen Bissette back on the show because I want to talk about that comic tyrant.
Yeah, we do.
All right, now I'm going to the fun questions. So what comics are you guys reading today?
Well, today we interviewed Carl Stevens, and he has a really wonderful independent series. Well, now it's with Chronicle Books, but it's about Penny, his cat. And it starts as just the inner workings of a house cat's mind. But within like, I would say a third of the book, the world really opens up.
It gets weird.
It gets really weird. And I love it so much. And in our interview today, we discovered that he has a second volume, Penny's Story Continues, and begins to integrate their second cat, Pepper. And I could not be more excited. The art is, he's an amazing artist and painter. So it's like if Calvin and Hobbes and a house cat had a baby.
And then it was painted extremely well.
It's a real interesting, feel good, beautiful comic. I really like it.
May 4th. So while you're celebrating Star Wars, read Penny.
And that was literally what I was reading today, and I was having the best time. And we've been reading a lot of Judge Dredd.
Yeah, we've been reading a lot of Judge Dredd. Mm-hmm. Like the polar opposite of Penny. Yeah, so like today, I've been reading a lot of Judge Dredd, a lot of Rob Williams' Judge Dredd, a lot of John Wagner's Judge Dredd. But like right now, like the comic I'm most excited about in like single issues, mm-hmm. and it's only got two issues out, is from Laura Samnee and Chris Samnee,
yes.
Jonna and the Impossible Monsters.
Mm-hmm, yes.
And I love that series. Or actually, it only has one issue out, but we've read the first two issues. Mm-hmm. And like, I think Chris Samnee is one of the best artists working today. He also does Firepower with Robert Kirkman, and
which we love.
Really enjoying that as well. But Jonna feels like an 80s, like a Goonies movie meets Mad Max. Like it's
kind of like sibling. It's like a story about siblinghood, but in like, it has like a fantasy
adventure, monsters, apocalypse stuff. It just, yeah. I love it so much. And because Lisa and I are a creative couple, it's great to see Laura and Chris Samnee working together on a title as well. I would love to get them on a podcast.
Yeah.
Let's put that out of the world.
How big is your comic book collection, original art, action figures, your collection overall?
So it's hard to quantify.
I know there are collectors that have apps and count and can tell you exactly how many issues we have. You know, one of the weird things is that I have, you know, 20 long boxes in my parents' house still.
That's good enough. I mean, you know.
So, and my parents are, I mean, you've heard this podcast. They're very loving, and what's the word I'm looking for? They're they supply my addiction. They don't say no.
They spoil you.
They spoil me. There you go. So they keep my comics. And then, like in this apartment, we have long boxes, spinner racks, shelves, and
like
shelves.
Literally every wall of our apartment is books. Every shelf that we have is completely full, and we have stacks of trades and hardcovers literally on the floor. The collection I'm most excited about right now is our commissions.
Yeah, and we've only just started doing that this year, and we've got, you know, what, 5 pieces. We have that Stan Sakai that Lisa mentioned, the Ramona Fraiden, and a couple Drew Mosses. Mm-hmm. And it's very, very nice to have some original pieces in the apartment now.
Do you guys want to give a shout out to your local comic shop?
I would love to. We have lots of great comic book shops in the area. The shop that I've been going to for the last 20 years is Big Planet Comics in Vienna, Virginia. It's at Big Planet Comics, or bigplanetcomics.com. You can find them. And they have multiple stores in the Washington, D.C., Maryland, Virginia area. The Vienna shop in particular is one of their smaller ones. It feels very intimate and comfy, and it's been shut down for the pandemic. They're only doing curbside. Mm-hmm. And I hate not being able to go into the shop, but at the same time, Jared and Kevin and the gang there, like, they know my tastes. I call them up, they make recommendations, they say like, hey, have you tried out this manga? Oh, you should pick up this new Silver Coin comic, I think it's really up your alley. And then I say, yeah, I trust you. They put it into my box and I pick it up on the doorstep, and it's really kind of wonderful.
We're excited. So we both have gotten our first vaccination.
Yep.
And our first stop after we are fully vaccinated and we both get haircuts, because we desperately need haircuts, is we're going to drive out to Annapolis, where there is Third Eye Comics, which is a huge comic book store where what we love most about them is they have a huge trades collection that are always cover price.
Yeah, always cover price.
And you would be shocked what you're able to find.
I mean, I got all the Usagi Yojimbo saga books from them at cover price at the start of the pandemic. Mm-hmm. And I will always be grateful for them.
And they have a really excellent hands-on staff that are super excited to talk to everyone and recommend whatever their little niche passion is. So it's a really welcoming environment.
That is pretty cool. And then when you guys are fully vaccinated, please, you guys will post pictures when you guys go to Third Eye Comics, right?
Oh, heck yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. For sure.
All right. Have you guys visited Hawaii?
Yeah. I actually have family in Hawaii. Yeah, that's actually where my parents met.
Oh.
My dad was a Marine and my mom was actually a nurse. And I texted her before we started recording to see if you guys work at the same hospital. But then, of course, I had to go on to airplane mode. Let's see if she got back. She didn't. But my mom and her family moved to Oahu when she was in high school. And she is actually the seventh of nine.
Okay.
So a few of her siblings still live on Oahu. And so I've been to Hawaii twice.
Mm-hmm.
Generally, when we meet with her side of the family, we meet in Las Vegas because it's halfway between Virginia and Hawaii, as halfway as you can get. Mm-hmm. And also my aunties like to gamble.
Yes.
But I've been to Hawaii twice, once when I was 2 and once when I was 12.
So it's been a while.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And going to Hawaii for me was not luau's. It's mostly just sitting with relatives and going to the beach. It was very fun. And I want to go back.
Yeah. And my dad.
But I want to do the tourist stuff. I've never done all of the tourist stuff.
My dad was Navy and I went there when he was stationed out there for 6 months and I was 5. So I really only remember the Navy base, if I'm going to be honest. But I've always wanted to get back.
Oh, okay. Well, when everything is safe and everything.
That's what we want to do. We generally want to do it. And like, we want to do the family stuff because that's important.
Yes, it is.
But we also want to break away from the family stuff.
Yeah. Well, and we want to go to conventions. We want to go to your comic book conventions.
Correct.
Yes. And I'm going to say, because our convention down here, we do, you know, there is the Amazing Comic-Con. There is the Comic-Con Honolulu. Amazing Comic-Con is the one more, for me, they bring the more current comic book stars down. They'll probably bring down some of the legendary creators, some of them. I don't know when they'll start that up again. And then Comic-Con Honolulu is more in August, and they bring more of the legendary creators down. The good thing about the conventions is, and I told you before we started, you know, it's not going to be crowded as Baltimore Comic-Con. You're going to walk in there, you have room to walk around. You know, you're going to be able to, you know, if you guys want to interview a creator, you know, just tell them, hey, can we do an interview with you? And they'll probably say, well, can you come back tomorrow? We'll do it right here. And you have so time cool. to do that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's no
that's appealing to me.
There's no crazy long line. Trust me. You know, what is your guys' favorite takeout place where you guys live?
So our local comic book store is in Vienna, and there's a lot of really cool, it's kind of like a little hip enclave in Northern Virginia. So almost right across the street, there is Cafe Amori, which is a really cool independent coffee shop. And then one of our favorite date places is there's a Sushiyama there.
Sushi Yoshi.
There's also a Sushiyama, but it's in another place. There's Sushi Yoshi It's always, well, before the pandemic, it was always packed.
Yeah, and it's a tiny, tiny little sushi shop. And like, for my money, it's the best sushi in the D.C. area.
Yeah, it's so good. And then there's also that pasty shop.
Yeah, there's a British pasty shop. Like I mentioned, my mom's English. And so getting a pasty is an event because so few shops make good ones. And this one makes an exceptional one. I like their cheese and onion.
You guys want to promote your social media platforms again?
Yes, of course we do. Again, Comic Book Couples Counseling, comicbookcouplescounseling.com. You can find us on Instagram and Twitter at CBCCcast.
Podcast.
Oh, gosh, I messed it up. My own social media is at Mouth Dork, which always raises an eyebrow, but it's because of In the Mouth of Dorkness. So it's at Mouth Dork. And then Lisa, where can they find you?
At Sidewalk Siren on Twitter and Instagram. On Instagram, you can see I do a little doodling. I do like to sketch. It happens maybe once every six to nine months.
I really love Lisa's sketches, and I want people to encourage her to do more. So if you see those sketches on her Instagram, please send her some likes and
words
of affirmation. I want more of them.
Any last words to our listeners?
Guys, Jason, thank you so much for having us come onto this podcast and chat and just celebrate comics. I love your passion for the medium. And, you know, you were talking about how we take these photos of our walks in the woods and whatnot in the Virginia area. And the reason we started posting those photos
is 1,000% true.
Is you. So you, Jason, in your social media would post photos of Hawaii. And Lisa and I were joking one day. We were like, what are we going to take photos of? Like our concrete shopping center across the street? And we needed to do something because we were in our apartments and going crazy in 2020. And we started going out on walks and we're like, oh, well, it's spring now. We can do what Jason does. And we started taking photos of flowers in our walks. And that is literally because of you.
Yes, 100%.
And you alone.
Yes.
Thank you very much. Because I kept thinking you guys had done that for the long. I kept thinking you guys did that.
No, like to me, what was great about those posts is it showed that you had such a love for your community and your environment. And Lisa and I have that love for our area too, but we hadn't really like,
we never thought about it as beautiful.
As beautiful, right. And so when we went out and then we were like, well, we have to find some beautiful things in this concrete jungle that we live in. And so that's what we did.
Like I said, Just thank you guys. Yeah,
thank you.
Well, I mean, like this, like talking to you is like the greatest outcome of Twitter. Cause that, like, Twitter is this place where you want to connect with cool, like-minded people. And just to have the opportunity to speak to someone that we met through one of these social medias is just so special. And so we really appreciate it.
No, but thank you very much. And thank you very much, guys, for following me, you know, because, you know, I listen to the podcast. That's where I found you guys, you know, and just to hear your guys again, you know, the passion, the positive energy, that's how I was kind of going, you know, I want to reach out to you guys to promote your podcast, promote your social media, to share it to everyone else, you know, to check out your podcast. If not, check out your media sites, your social media sites.
I mean, I appreciate it. I really, really do. And I hope that the people listening do join us over at Comic Book Couples Counseling. Give our shows a listen. And if you do, let us know what you think and like what couples you would like us to cover. There are so many rad comic book couples out there in the wide world of comics. And we don't just cover X-Men and Justice League members. Like we said, we do Usagi Yojimbo. We're going to delve into Love and Rockets in the future, hopefully.
And I do think for those of you who are listening and you're in a couple where your partner might not necessarily be into comics, I think that Comic Book Couples Counseling can be something to bring someone over to the comic book narrative. Because really, if there's one thing I've learned about comics is that there is one for literally every person.
Yes.
That it's not just for dudes who are into spandex. You know, there is something for you.
Comics are like movies or books, right? There are multiple genres. There's multiple flavors. Go find them.
All right. On that note, guys, I better let you guys go because it's almost 9:30 your time. I just want to say, you know, thank you very much for your time. Until next time, guys, aloha.
Aloha. Aloha.
That was my interview with Brad and Lisa Gullickson from the Comic Book Couples Counseling Podcast. It was so awesome to talk to Brad and Lisa about the hobbies. I mean, everything from comics to movies and the monkeys. You know, hobbies that we all love. Now, Lisa, I used to watch the monkey reruns. You know, that show was just good, clean, fun. And, you know, like I said, it was a fun TV show. It really was. You know, Brad and Lisa spoke about their interview with artist Stephen Bissett. To be upfront, I've never read Alan Moore's and Bissett's Swamp Thing run. But after talking to Brad and Lisa, you know, I want to check out, you know, their past episodes of going over the Moore and Bissett Swamp Thing run. And those episodes are episodes 34 and 35. And I also want to check out their interview with Stephen Bissett. That is episode 59. And then after that, you know, I'll pick up the first trade of this groundbreaking series from Dragon's Lair in Hawaii. You know, and also too, if you get a chance, please check out new episodes of the Comic Book Couples Counseling Podcast. Now, you know, I want to say, you know, mahalo, thank you in Hawaiian, to a few people who made this episode possible. First off, I want to thank Brad and Lisa, you know, for their time and giving me the opportunity to interview them. Brad and Lisa, it was so cool to talk to you guys. Again, thank you very much. I also want to thank John Mayo of the Comic Book Page podcast for letting me contribute to his podcast, you know, and for doing all the heavy lifting behind the scenes, you know, for putting this episode together. So again, thank you very much, John. Now, if you are a new listener to the Comic Book Page podcast, please check out new episodes that come out every Monday. Some episodes focus on back issues, and he'll have like a monthly comic spotlight review with his co-host, James, as they review, you know, recent comics that they read that came out for that month. And I want to thank you, the listeners, for your time. And thank you very much for listening to this episode. Until next time, guys. Aloha.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.